This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Yes, it is.
Big sporting weekend.
Huge. Almost too big, David.
I barely recovered. The Ryder Cup, Rog.
Yeah.
European jingoism.
Oh, I was actually cheering for the United States, David.
You were?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I find it physically impossible to cheer for Europe. You do know that's another word for Germany, France and Switzerland, right?
Yeah, yeah. There were no Swiss players on the Ryder Cup team. There were Germans. There was a Frenchman.
V-Dub.
V-Dub with his soft of hand. Vince, we had a Neil. Dane, Spaniard, yep. Rog. Lots of them.
As a
Swedes.
Aspirational American.
Yeah.
I didn't like watching Phil Mickelson throw Tom Watson under the bus.
Oh, yeah, I know. Dishonoured. What stays in the locker room really should stay there in the locker room, right, Rog?
It's like watching a beloved granddad get beat up.
Yeah, I know. I love Tom Watson, too.
He's revered.
Yeah.
It was as close as I want to ever see Tom Watson slobbing around on the floor, drunk, trying to pick a cheeseburger off the floor. I used to think about David Hasselhoff like, yeah, I think about Tom Watson. I do not want Tom to plummet to those depths. I've been thinking a lot about the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't that competitive, David.
I thought it was extraordinarily competitive.
I mean, outside of the US press conferences.
Well, that was very... But it's always... The Ryder Cup as a format, Roger, as a lover of formats, it always, always delivers. And as lopsided as the victory ended up being, there was a point on Sunday where it suddenly looked like the US were going to get back.
We're going to be very American.
It looked like the Americans were going to be very American. Tom Watson, in truth, didn't have the greatest Ryder Cup.
Watch weekend. It.
But the players also, and you've got to look at those veteran players, Rog. The old guys didn't really lead the team. It was the younger guys of the US who did much better.
But you know, like when we grew up, yeah, the Ryder Cup meant a pistol whipping at the hands of the United States.
Oh, biennially, every 2 years, right?
And then we added...
Ireland.
And that wasn't enough.
Yeah.
So we added...
The whole of Europe.
Yeah, we added the whole of Europe. We got, yeah, the cavalry in. And I think, I'm going to float this, I do think it might be time, Davo,
yeah,
for the USA to add CONCACAF.
Yeah, all the great golfers from Costa Rica.
Antigua and Barbuda.
Is that who you want to add?
I think it'll level the playing field.
Yeah, there's not really anyone from the for the US to add. I mean...
Miguel Herrera.
Well, they could have El Pato Cabrera, the great Argentinian player. He'd be a fantastic Ryder Cup player. That would be pretty much it if the Americas were added.
I did enjoy in the Ryder Cup. I enjoyed how Sir Alex Ferguson inserted himself.
Yeah.
He gave his motivational speech before, yep, a golf ball was hit.
Yeah.
Rory McIlroy.
He's a huge United fan, Rog.
Rory McIlroy said, I was, quote, in a trance, Dave. Yeah. In a trance.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to do okay in 2 years' time when David Moyes gives them the pre-Hazeltine?
Well, it could be. It's Europe, Rog. It could be Louis van Gaal. Although Poulter probably would like, you know, Arsene to come and do it. No wonder Poulter played so badly, having to listen to Sir Alex Ferguson.
I don't think Arsene's a golfing type, David.
Thing. No, le golf.
It's been a very inversion of identity sporting weekend.
Yeah.
You had the Major League Baseball writers stepping aside and allowing the English Premier League writers to kind of arc out the narrative of Jeter's farewell.
Yeah.
The passing of Derek Jeter.
He didn't. He's not gone. He's not gone. He's just not playing baseball anymore. Right?
It was a very, let's just say, that walk-off single.
Yeah.
It was very Frank Lampardish.
It was. It was a little bit Frank Lampardish, Rog.
We had a good tweet from at Peter Fraser.
Yeah.
Who wanted to know, at Men in Blazers, how weird will the gifts be in Wayne Rooney's farewell season? You know how like everyone's been buying him like wakeboards or Napa Valley, Derek Jeter, Malbecs or... I can only think the Baltimore Orioles gave Derek Jeter a basket of crabs.
Like they're very good. The crabs down there in the Chesapeake Bay area, fantastic though, Roger.
I can imagine Sunderland giving Wayne Rooney chlamydia as a farewell gift. We also had the NFL in London.
Yeah, we love the NFL in London, Roger.
Miami against Oakland.
Yeah.
Do you know how many people went to that?
How many went?
83,000. 436.
That's a lot. By the way, at the same time as the NFL is having attendance issues in the United States, Rod.
There were 40,181,000 to watch England against Norway.
Yeah, well... Yeah.
What do we?
Miami against Oakland is a much better game of football.
English
than England
people
versus Norway.
Just love Sebastian Janikowski.
Yeah, there you go. That's what they enjoy.
And then, even worse, Davo, inversions. Mm-hmm. American television being sullied, Davo, by our presence again. Our very orange presence.
Oh no, we were so orange yesterday. I've got to have a word with our makeup department. Which is basically you and I taking one thing of powder and putting it all over our head, meaning that we've got to stop doing that.
It was definitely one of our top two episodes.
Yeah, of the two that we've made.
We got a lovely raven from a GFOP, Cody Spencer.
Oh,
one of the most supportive and praiseworthy about our new television efforts.
I've got it right here, Rog. Dear Rog and Davo, I could not sleep last night as Come On Everybody rang through my ears on a loop. I was forced to listen to a chain of worse and worse songs in an attempt to force the eardrum stabbing numbness from my head. Thank you very much. That's really sweet. We feel like we've achieved something.
Yeah, and he then lists the songs Barbie Girl, The Macarena.
Oh.
He then listened to My Humps, My Lovely Lady Lumps.
Yeah.
And then If You Like Pina Coladas, he said, and finally The Atomic Bomb, Creed's With Arms Wide Open.
Oh my God, that's a terrible song. Difference. No, that's in my head.
The would not stop. I've got to tell you, I found that offensive.
What?
That email.
You do?
Yeah. I do. If You Like Pina Coladas by Rupert Holmes.
That's a fantastic song.
It's also one of the saddest songs ever, not written by Tracy Chapman. For those of you who don't know what it is, it's a sad song masquerading as a happy song. Mm-hmm. YouTube it. Essentially, the storyline is about a husband who's so fed up with his relationship and his marriage that he decides in verse one to have an affair by answering a personal ad in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Only to find that the woman he meets up with for a sordid dalliance is actually his
own wife.
It's his own wife turns up through a acquaintance in the back of a newspaper.
Oh.
I can't imagine what that must feel like.
Yeah.
It must be a bit like being married to Angelina Jolie, I imagine.
But doesn't it end
that
up all happy?
That song's nothing like our theme tune. That's what I'm saying. It's nothing like our theme tune.
Yeah.
Our theme tune's a lot darker than that.
It's all in the eye and the ear of the beholder, Roger. I find that song uplifting. It's about hope. Find it hilarious. I love it. I love every second of it.
Every lyric in it of our song was a metaphor for despair and doom and self-loathing. But I do know it cost us a fair penny to get Kajagoogoo to reunite.
Yeah, I know.
Just it was, for 1 minute. Put aside your arguments, lads, and do it for football, we said.
Talking the football, Rog, we're now 6/38 of the way through the Premier League season. That reduces, Rog, that's 3/19. This was Derby Day weekend. Derby Day? Not quite sure how to pronounce that, Rog. A day on which brother fought brother. Families were wrought by internecine violence, Rog, including your own, your brother, Nige, a Liverpool fan. And four rather dodgy teams fought desperately for self-respect. A battle, arguably, that none of them ultimately could claim to have won, Rog. We've got a packed show. We're going to revel in every game like Bentheim black-eyed pigs. Apparently a breed of pigs. We're going to update you on important breaking news on the issues of dog naming. Rog, the GDOP, about 6 weeks away. FIFA 16 covers and more. And we're going to tend to your Ravens. To the football.
Oh, David.
Let's crack open the Guinness. Let's tap it. Tap it on the top. You've got to tap it on the top, Rog. Look. Oh, you just managed to get that in your glass before it overflowed, as I did too.
To Jags. And to Tweed.
Jags actually is an early contender for the name of the GDOP, I have to say. Cheers, Rog.
Oh, cheers, mate.
Clink that.
To life.
Okay. Okay, football. Liverpool 1, Everton 1, Rog. The 223rd Merseyside derby was a huff and puff affair. Liverpool thought they'd taken 3 points after Steven Gerrard did what Steven Gerrard always seems to do, Rog. Steered a 65th-minute free kick past Tim Howard, but in the game's dying embers, Everton's Phil Jagielka unleashed a 91st-minute wonder strike that miraculously swerved away from Simon Mignolet into the top corner, silencing, shocking, stunning the Anfield faithful. I need to describe the look on my partner in pod, Rog Bennett's face right now is giddier than I've ever seen it. He is moving from side to side. He's shaking. He's leaning back in his chair as though he's enjoying something unspeakable at this point.
Do you remember the side effects of the Brazilian walking spider, David?
Yeah, I think I do.
Yeah. That's what it's felt like for me ever
really,
since.
Really, it's been lasted it. Ever since.
Yep.
Wow, that's amazing.
I think the Brazilian walking spider was just a 24-hour impact.
Yeah, this has been 72 hours at this point, at least. But, Rog, it was only a 1-1 draw. But that goal seems to have done more for you than any Everton win ever. You're happier now about that 1-1 draw and the Jagielka goal at the end than I've ever seen you, even after the largest Everton victories.
That feeling when the ball went in, David.
Yeah.
That is probably as close as we will get to a trophy in my lifting a trophy in my lifetime.
I tell you, Arsene Wenger might call that a trophy.
So I want to savour it.
Yeah.
But also, to put it into context, this January.
Yeah.
I was at Anfield for the last derby.
Yeah.
Where Everton lost 4-0, and where every time we attacked, Liverpool looked the likelier team to score. We were like a dog choking itself on a choke chain with that counter-attack. I was there that night reporting for ESPN. I asked my editor if I could leave at halftime and just go home. And then, no, you're there for a job. You've got to stay to the end. So I was full of... The night before the derby was dark and full of terrors. Everything made me sick. The week up to it, every article where James McCarthy said, I want to make amends for the 4-0 loss. Felt queasy reading that. Do they not know about foreshadowing? And the night before, I couldn't sleep. I felt a lot, to be candid. I read a lot of World War I poetry.
Yeah.
And so from that, how I imagine infantrymen who were told the next morning they were going to have to attack a German machine gun.
Oh, go pillbox. First over the trenches, Rog.
That's how I felt, David.
Yeah.
But it was to get worse than that.
Yeah.
I woke up in the morning. What did we read in the newspapers?
Oh, who's going to be starting his first game in years, Rog? Hibbo.
He's back. December 2012 was when he lost try to kick a football in anger. Tony Hibbert, back.
He's a good-looking man, though, Rog. Oh, I mean, what a fine-looking human.
That is a proper Liverpool face. Looks very Liverpool or very Vladimir Putin, depending how much you win, read the international pages of the New York Times. But what it meant was it wasn't just that Hibbo, a man who hadn't played since Americans really cared about the Premier League, was playing. It was that Seamus Coleman wasn't. Mm-hmm. And Everton had elected to go into battle with one hand behind their backs. I tweeted that out because without Seamus, we have no balance at all on the right-hand side, no balance at all. We're very, very predictable, very easy to stop. I tweeted out about the one hand behind your back, and at Sean Weston 619 tweeted back and said, with Lovren, Skrtel and Mignolet, Liverpool are trying to beat you with both arms and one leg tied behind our back. It did make me feel a tiny bit better. But in the opening exchanges, Raheem Sterling, he just kept running at Hibbert. It was the sight of youth against experience, skill against never had any. And the first 30 minutes were excruciating.
Yeah, I mean, in truth, the first half was not that good. You know, Brendan Rodgers strikes me at this point as a man who is very conscious that he's playing the role of Brendan Rodgers, playing the role of Liverpool manager.
Wheels within wheels.
He's constantly seems to be acting the part, whether actually sort of being it. Like, and we saw all those little hand gestures down on the line, the close talking to Coutinho. Like, just every moment he seems so conscious of other people watching him, what he's doing. And the fact is that over the last few games, Liverpool, with all of that incision, with all of that forward-thinking play, with all of that attacking ferocity that they had last season, this season they just sort of appear a little bit lost as a team. Balotelli coming in. I mean, what did he do first half, Rog?
Well, they had Lallana play right behind him.
Yeah.
And to begin with, the first 30 minutes, they outthought, they outmoved, they outmuscled Everton, who seeded the wings. Lallana pulled the strings behind Balotelli, Sterling and the second-rate Markovic. By the way, Lallana, Dave, was an Everton fan as a child. His entire family are Everton fans.
Wow.
As a Chelsea supporter, if your son George grew up and played for QPR or Fulham, Derby Day, team or family? Team, right?
No, I don't know. I mean, like, Honestly, the idea of if he ended up playing for QPR or Fulham or supporting QPR or Fulham, it would just appear somewhat harmless to me. It's not a genuine threat, Roger. It's really not. It's not an act of his son. Lallana played quite well, I would say. He was bright, I would say. Lots of effort. But there's no incision in Liverpool's play.
Balotelli was unbelievable.
Yeah.
At falling over.
Yeah, he's so good at that.
Oh, I love him. He's so theatrical.
Feels the weight of the shirt, Roger.
I mean, Liverpool fans are appreciative and eager to emphasise what they call work rate, which is the last thing you actually expected from Balotelli. So they're emphasising what you didn't think he gave that he is giving. But he had 10 shots. He created no chances. He fell over 27 times. And you see...
A Opta keeping that stat.
Without
now.
Suarez, it's one of the key... Billy Bean emails me. He keeps the falling over stats. The reality is that you do not fear right now Liverpool with Balotelli in the same way as Liverpool with obviously Sturridge injured and Suarez departed. You were terrified of them last season.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what this game was. Do you remember Mike Corbett, our producer at Sirius?
Oh, yeah.
He loved violence.
Yeah, pikey fighting.
Yeah, bum fights.
Yeah, love that.
He used to watch when we were in the adverts, these frightening YouTube fights, which I don't quite understand them still, but they were terrifying.
Yeah.
It was two homeless men who were goaded into, on camera,
absolutely
beating the crap out of each other. It was horrible to watch. Mm-hmm. This game was very much like a bum fight.
Like a bum fight.
Yeah,
like a pikey fight.
By the way, one thing about Balotelli, when he had his best chance, credit to Tim Howard, who's been beleaguered this season.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the Belgian Tim Howard rather than the Tim Howard at Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that
was
a fantastic save.
Everton.
It looked like a terrible miss, but then it turned out that it was a fantastic save from Tim Howard.
We're talking about two duff big men in this game because Everton were no better. Their strategy was to dump the ball off to Lukaku. On the right, and I hope he could conjure some magic. I wrote a book once about summer camp, and there's a great story in it that one guy told me about how every night in, I think it was Kreskeville, Pennsylvania, their Jewish summer camp would be overrun once it got dark by malicious townies who kind of creep onto the property and kick the crap out of any kid they could find.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they had one big camper on the who turned up every year called Gooby.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems like some kind of Jewish Jim Thorpe. He was enormous. He could wrestle a bear. He was just their hero.
Uh-huh.
And he said once it got dark, everyone knew where Gooby was. They'd all kind of stand around him and hope that Gooby would protect them. That's how Everton are with Lukaku. He's Everton's Gooby. But the only thing is, he seems to be a huge guy that cannot hurt a fly right now. His first touch is unreliable. His best move is known to pretty well every defender. It's like cutting inside like a cumbersome, slow-witted Iron Robin pretend. And we had nothing, David.
Yeah, he doesn't have quick feet. There's no doubt about it. Doesn't play well with his back to goal, and he doesn't have very quick feet, Lukaku. He's good when he's on the run, on the move, with the ball at his feet.
Like at half-time, David, I did ask myself, why am I watching this? What else do we do in our life like this that's voluntarily so unbearable, but you just grit through it?
There's the dentist.
You're having work done.
I'm having my teeth Brendan Rodgers.
You are? You're taking a photo of Brendan Rodgers to your dentist saying,
no, I'm going to have them done. I don't know. I mean, it wasn't, even for the neutral, there was very, very little in the game, but I wanted to see how it turned out. Second half, Rog, everything changes. 65th minute, I believe. Steven Gerrard.
Cruelest law of nature.
It was I'm not sure that I completely agree with the awarding of that free kick, even, Rog. Steven Gerrard steps up, gets in front of Balotelli. Perfectly taken free kick, one has to say. Tim Howard had absolutely no chance whatsoever. And 1-0 to the Liverpool, and it just looked like doom and gloom. Maybe worse than that, Roger, I imagine, within the Bennett household.
What's worse than at that doom point, and gloom?
Well, doomer and gloomier, doomiest and gloomiest, I don't know.
David, I'll say a quick word on Steven Gerrard. It's so predictable it was him that scored. I think this is his 10th Derby goal in 32 games.
Yeah.
He's back, kind of gesticulating towards the crowd. Let me hear your criticism now, as he ran towards the Liverpool fans. The honest truth is, I imagine Steven Gerrard, when he's 87, will be able to get out of his wheelchair and kick a free kick like that. I mean, his set pieces are superlative. It's like watching Morten Andersen kick field goals. A huge percentage of his goals, I think like his last 20 goals, have been from set plays. That's it. That's all I say, though, we do often,
you know, Beckham was often criticised for this. All he's got is a great right foot, the ability to deliver a great set piece. When you're a professional footballer and you're playing and so many goals come from set pieces, it's quite a useful attribute to have an amazing right foot and to be able to, like, put the ball into dangerous areas from free kicks or be able to, like, convert.
Shuffle him into place like a siege gun at critical times. I did feel like it was it, Dave. With Morales out with injury, Everton had no kind of inventive threat. Aidan McGeady, he's to the Premier League what Payless shoes is to footwear. And Everton just couldn't syncopate. There was no coordination between the lines. And I wrote down in my little game book, David, with a tear, the ink definitely smudged with a tear. The thing that depressed me about this game, I'm used to lack of quality as an Everton fan.
Yeah.
Used to it. Impervious. But there seemed to be a lack of heart and hunger. And I've rarely seen a derby game where an Everton side lacked that kind of character. It was absolutely absent. I took solace in a quote that a GFOP, Anders Burt, had sent me from a great American. Character cannot be developed in ease and quiet. Only through experience of trial and suffering can the soul be strengthened, ambition inspired, and success achieved. Helen Keller said that.
Wow.
Not about Everton Football Club.
Yeah, weirdly. Yeah. Although you did look it up to see if she maybe was sympathetic towards Everton.
But I'm sure she would have loved Jags.
Yeah.
The Jags moment.
So let me ask you, the Jags moment, before we get to that 91st minute, let's go back to, had I said, we've talked a lot about the concept of the strafender this season, the defender as striker. We've seen a lot of amazing strafender goals, none better than this goal from Jags.
An act of Tarico,
isn't it? Had I said to you before this weekend, talk to me of Phil Jagielka, his striking, his goal-scoring ability, you'd have said, what, the occasional header from a corner, perhaps a header from open play. But I've talked to you about great Phil Jagielka goals that he's scored for Everton. What would have come to mind?
I mean, what we discussed was if you gave Phil Jagielka 1,000 goes at doing that,
yeah,
how many times would he actually execute?
But how many times would he actually attempt it? I mean,
Phil Jagielka is very good at set pieces, at like running to the near post, heading it. It goes woefully wide, and then the camera closes on his face, and he does a very handsome grimace, and does a little hop of, oh, next time, and then runs back to defence. That's what he's very, very good at.
But the amazing thing about it,
Everton don't do this. Everton do not do this. It's not in our character.
So, you know, I when I was a tennis player, Roger, I used to talk a lot, I had a coach who used to talk a lot about creative visualisation. To hit the backhand passing shot, you had to see the backhand passing shot and feel what it was going to feel like before you could actually make it.
You have to be the ball.
Gerrard, the amazing thing, not only a great right foot, he has to visualise that free kick going in before it got there. Jags had to visualise hitting that ball on the half volley, starting it right at Mignolet to peel away to go and make it
there. I bet you, Jack, first of all, Steven Gerrard probably visualises in the air tonight the opening bars of that song. That's all you need to think about. Secondly, Jags, I would imagine, did it with reverse psychology. I would imagine he visualised that ball pinging off his foot going into row L.
Really?
Just flying above. And see, he tricked himself. He re-rigged his own brain in trying to put it over the back of the stadium. Yeah. He thus controlled it.
He missed what he was trying to do, is what you're saying.
You got me.
See, I think he was just trying to wallop it. Just wallop. Just put his laces through that ball and wallop it.
I think he probably thought, ball, you be Stuart Downey.
Yeah.
I'll be Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's probably all there is to it.
You're right. Jags' contact on that ball was the second best contact of the weekend after Rooney's
kick. All I can tell you is, I can't tell you what noise came out of my mouth as that ball.
Really? Oh, there's no way to transcribe it.
It was Viking. I think I spoke Norse. I was overwhelmed by a tingling, Dave.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, for a second, my nipples got so hard.
Yeah.
I looked like I was wearing an Arsenal jersey. And the oddest part of it was, Phil Jagielka was totally either stunned or completely unfazed that it went in. He didn't really. He looked like pretty poker faced. And I was just turning to my wife saying, babe, we are going to have a fifth child now and we're going to call her Phil Jagielka Bennett.
Could be the name of the GDOP, Rog. I have an alternate theory.
Go on.
Maybe this wasn't Phil Jagielka. Remember that show Quantum Leap, Rog?
Yes.
See, I was thinking that maybe there was some Quantum Leap
That documentary show.
Yeah, or maybe there was some time travel involved. Maybe we'll find out about this 100 years from now, that these were aliens who came down and changed key moments.
Well, Mike
Tirico
did tweet at us just at that second before the goal. He was in an airport and he just looked up at the television and then the ball went in.
It's a sign of Tiricoism.
It is.
Yeah.
Maybe there's just some theology at work. Yeah. All I say is a gif of that goal, Davo. As long as I have a cell phone and every Evertonian. My mate Jamie ran into Graham Sharp, was an Everton striker for a long time in the 80s.
Yeah.
Scored a wonder goal. A wonder goal. Look it up, Everton fans, 1984 Derby. And my mate Jamie ran into his brother-in-law at the Edinburgh Festival. They were absolutely hammered. And his cell phone photo was just a moving gif of Sharpie's goal. This is like 20 years, 30 years on. Like that goal is still so present. And that goal, I will never forget that feeling. I will never forget that goal. Being an Everton fan is hard. It is cruel. Happiness is but a fleeting emotion. A little bit like Tessa de D'Urbervilles. Happiness is a fleeting emotion in a life of numbness and pain. And it carries me. I'll say it was a draw that felt like a massive win. But let's be honest, that wonder goal, Davo, was a toupee on a very bald performance. Liverpool were hardly more impressive. Their problems up front and across the back line are very, very clear with Sturridge injured. Everton were extremely poor. Massive game ahead against Man United. Then Villa, Burnley, Swansea, Sunderland, West Ham. I mean, real underbelly where points should be picked up. But with that team, with those kind of performances, it's hard to see. At Gunner Fan 06 tweeted us, at Men in Blazers, Rodgers game emotions, thickening, softening, throbbing. You know me too well.
Arsenal 1, Tottenham 1, and Nasser Chadli's smash and grab gave Spurs a North London derby lead in the 56th minute. But after dominating possession for much of the game, the Gunners finally broke through thanks to an Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain close-range effort. He's only ever scored at home in the league for Arsenal, Rog. The point moves Arsenal into the top four, Rog.
This was Pochettino's first derby.
Yeah, derby.
Arsene Wenger's been living and dying through them for 18 years.
Yep.
I thought his comment beforehand was fascinating, Pochettino. Mm-hmm. He said, I enjoy the danger of derbies.
Yeah.
I'm stronger in hostile situations.
Yeah.
I like them. Are you like that?
Big games, I like it. Big matches, you feel alive, Rog.
But in life?
What?
When you're kind of confronted, do you...
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, I like big moments. I like to feel alive. You feel alive in those moments, Rog. I've said before that sometimes the only times I truly feel alive is when I'm counting down to a really big TV show. Like as you're watching the second hand come to the top of the hour and you know you're about to go live. I love the moment. I love the moment. And I imagine that's what it feels like when you're on the sideline. Really? I loved Arlo White's comment that he's suited and booted. Looking very good.
Poetry.
Dispense of the tracksuit.
English Walt Whitman. I agree with Pochettino. I love the taste of my own blood in my mouth. Anyway, a little hostile about it, to be honest. It's just strangely subdued as a game like this goes. There's Arsene Wenger's curious call to pop Alexis Sanchez and Santi Cazorla on the bench with an eye to the Champions League. Ramsey, Wilshere, the Ox, they just seem to lack balance. Spurs weren't threatened. Spurs with Ryan Mason, fascinating, 23-year-old, made his debut 6 years ago, but has hardly... Made
he's been loaned
impact
everywhere,
since.
Rog.
Yeah, he looks more like a barista than a Premier League footballer. we were joking, it looks like seeing Ray from Girls in a Premier League game.
Yeah.
He started well, but then kind of wilted. And the game had little passion, it had even less edge. It's kind of niggly rather than the big clash of epic proportion. And the big talking points came when Arsenal lost one old, ineffective midfield shield for another. Mm-hmm. Mikel Arteta for Flamini.
Yeah.
Arteta falling victim to what looked like terrible, terrible nipple chafing.
Yeah.
They lost Ramsey to hamstring. And Flamini coming on came back to haunt them because it was him that was knocked off the ball, Davo, by Eriksen.
Yeah, and that's it's the second way. We talked last week about, you know, one way that Arsenal like to concede goals is from their moment of attack. The moment that they're in the opposition's penalty area, they never look more likely to concede than when they're all the way out there. The other way is the giveaway. Being muscled off the ball in the centre of midfield.
Yeah,
ever since Vieira left.
Set pieces.
Oh, yeah, zonal marking. They also do that very well.
But I've got to say, being Flamini, being blown away by Eriksen.
Yeah.
It's like being knocked over by sparrow flatulence.
Yeah.
I don't know if such a thing exists, sparrow flatulence, but it's what I felt like when I... Do you think? Yeah, you think so.
It must do.
Chadli's finish, very cool. He's had 4 goals in 5 Premier League appearances.
Yeah.
But then Arsenal just piled on the pressure. Mertesacker forced Lloris into slightly dodgy use of goal line technology. Mm-hmm. Sanchez came on. You always sit up when Sanchez came on.
Oh, well, just to the hiking up of the shorts, Roger. It's always good to see.
You can never have more thigh on show tactically.
Well, he went for the alternate thigh. We talked about it on the TV show last night, Roger. He went for the alternate thigh. One side of the shorts up, one side down. Seems to be a new look. We'll keep on watching that.
Lamela got an assist on the Spurs goal. He should have got an assist on the Arsenal goal. That inventive heading the ball back into his own area.
Yeah.
Welbeck with that dummy.
I mean, completely missed the ball. Obviously, deliberately.
Oh, it's a masterstroke. Training ground move. Oxlade-Chamberlain slid towards the corner flag after scoring. The amount of cleavage, Davo, on display, as he did say, was almost indecent.
Yeah.
Arsenal then pressed for the winner. They had 15 corners. And I think they only created one chance from them. And the big kind of takeaway, these injuries. I mean, Arsene Wenger afterwards said he's shocked by these injuries and how thin it's left his squad. How can he be shocked by that? It's like Arsenal rules. Do not go into the deserted funfair late at night. Don't go into a Premier League campaign with two fit blokes, a teen, and half a cheese and onion pie to play across your back line. Everybody saw this coming for Arsenal, apart from Arsenal. 745 total injuries they've had in the last decade. 14% more, according to the Daily Telegraph, than anyone else in the Premier League.
So, I mean, look, there are lots of reasons for injuries. Many people blame the physios. They're obviously doing a switch over the physios at Arsenal. But you've got to look at Wenger also. The kind of players that he likes are these brittle, you know, they've got flair, but they often don't have that kind of strength. You wouldn't have seen Arsene go after a player like Lampard, a guy who is going to play game after game after game after game. He likes the Wilshers. You know, he likes the Walcotts. He likes the Flaminis. He likes these sort of lightweight players. They're the players that play the kind of football he likes. So, you know what? You live by the sword, you die by the sword.
He's the kind of guy who looks at Michelangelo's David and thinks it's all the more beautiful for being flawed and broken. But they got up to 6 first-teamers out for the oncoming Chelsea game. They can't stop leaking the first goal. They're fourth. Is it half full or hot or kind of chipped and cutting your lip as you try and drink out of it, the cup for Arsenal at the moment, Dave? I mean, it's better to be them than Spurs, right? We agree with that.
Well, look, I think Arsenal are better than they were last season. And I think at points when Arsenal are playing attacking football, they really do look as good as anyone and maybe almost the best in the league. They look like they're going to destroy the smaller teams, to me. And that's something they did very well last season. Their problems last season were against the bigger teams in the league. Already this season, their results against the top teams seem to be better on form than they were last season.
Undefeated.
Yeah.
Still yet to truly impress. But 2 draws, 2 losses for Spurs in the last 4 games. And there's a saying in English, I don't know what it translates you to in America, but it's like painting the fourth bridge. It's like a task that you get to the end of and you have to start all over again. Spurs seem to be perpetually a work in progress. For me, the bright spark of their weekend was Adebayor's hair. It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
If I was Wayne Rooney, I'd be looking in his direction when I next need a hair donut.
Tottenham, I don't know what to think about Tottenham. I love some of their individual players. Love watching them play football. Eriksen, we mentioned him earlier, Roger. Just he is a wonderful, wonderful Premier League footballer. I love watching them play football. I think Lloris is a great keeper. We love the Dire Wolf came on late as a substitute. But the sum of the parts doesn't seem to really make any sense at Tottenham to me. I think they're going to struggle to get into the Champions League places this season.
Making any sense? Good segue into United.
Oh, my word. Manchester United 2, West Ham 1. Bipolar Wayne Rooney. A performance that only Dr. Jennifer Melfi could truly understand. I think she would be hard-pushed, Rog. The United captain started the game with a fantastic finish that put his team up just 5 minutes in. But in the 59th minute, he scythed down Stuart Downing, Rog. Apparently, you're not allowed to do that. He received a red card, forced United to cling to a 2-1 lead with 10 men for the remaining half hour. The win moves United into 7th in the table. Amazing piece about Wayne Rooney in today's Telegraph by Henry Winter. Almost an off-narrative piece, a defence of Wayne Rooney, a defence of his record, saying this is just an isolated incident, I paraphrase, and that we can't, like, you know, call it too harshly. Seemed odd, Rog. Well,
the whole thing was odd. You could tune into United this season a little bit like you watch 16 and Pregnant.
Yeah.
You kind of watch them to feel better about your own life. But this week was the oddest of all, because it started off so calmly, Davey. Mm-hmm. Inside 5 minutes, Raphael, that beautiful ball, Wayne Rooney clipping it home. How do you describe that finish?
It was Rooney of yore, but it was a fantastic finish.
Martin Samuel called it a tension breaker, is what he called it. It just felt like the wind went out of the game sails. RVP doubled the score. And it's fascinating to watch him because with all the turbulence at Old Trafford, Robin van Persie kind of seems increasingly detached. Less a senior member of the team and more kind of a principality like San Marino or Monaco. But he loves scoring against West Ham. This was his sixth strength game against the Hammers in which he scored. But then the game just became kind of very Ibsen-esque. A repressed conflict emerged out of apparent normality to tear the family apart.
Yeah.
Rooney, captain, leader. He goes all Roger Clemens. And as you and Henry Winter are asking, Davo, he's leaving a 10-man team with a dodgy backline and young, young talent, absolutely unbroken in the Premier League. Why, Davo? Why?
Also, I think he ruined something great. Yes, it was slightly testy. West Ham were coming back at Manchester United at this point. But this was actually a much better Manchester United performance against a considerably improved West Ham United team, Rog. He is the captain of this team. He is the captain of Manchester United. This is the kind of foul that we see petulant schoolboys make. Aberrant individuals, Rog, not captains of Manchester United. It was Stuart Downing, without any doubt, not one of the most popular players in English football. But it was just, it's kind of like depressing to watch that foul.
Well, they say the captain thing, they say he's a terrible leader. But, I mean, you look at Pol Pot, Tite, Idi Amin. There's different models of leadership, David. Yeah. Definitely different models of leadership. But I just don't understand where it came from. And that's the question that we're all trying to understand.
I think the one thing that I do agree with Henry Winter's article, I don't defend that behaviour. I can't say, oh, this is just he's really got his disciplinary record right and that he does deserve to be kept. I can't defend everything about Wayne Rooney's behaviour. What I would say is reasonable is that Wayne Rooney is still a fantastic footballer as that goal maintained. And to truly appreciate Wayne Rooney, to truly understand Wayne Rooney, you've got to understand both sides. You've got to understand the quality of that finish. He's still got it. This guy is quite likely to end up as Manchester United's leading scorer of all time, as England's leading scorer of all time, Rog. That is an amazing achievement. Whatever he's done at World Cups, whatever he's done at big tournaments, it is pretty phenomenal, the scoring record that this guy is going to end up having. This kind of petulant schoolboy thuggishness, it's difficult to marry the two and think about it. I think a lot of times one would have to say that we find it difficult to forgive Wayne Rooney for not being as good as Ronaldo, as Messi, for truly not being the world-class player that we thought he was. But he's still bloody good, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, there is a very much a track record of this. I remember playing Wigan about three seasons ago. The game kicked off and he gave a stiff arm. So I think it was James McArthur very early on in the game. It was just so shocking.
Yeah.
And I think he even got away with it on that day. There's the foul last season.
Oh, the lash out against Montenegro, like all of them.
I mean, it's a recurrent theme. LVG, I loved it. He quote called it a too unfriendly kind of tackle. He's now out for the month of October. Rooney out for Everton, West Brom and Chelsea on the horizon. United fans, fascinating. I think they'll be emotionally furious, but rationally pretty excited to see how the team operates without him, because a ruling-less United may be the United of the future. Something we got to see yesterday, we asked for isolation footage of Louis van Gaal.
Oh, amazing.
Every shot that the television cameras captured of Louis van Gaal in the course of 90 minutes. It was like that movie about Zidane where they only kept the cameras on it. I would love to do a movie just of 90 minutes of a game watching Louis van Gaal. How would you describe it,
well,
David?
Well, it's funny. What we were looking for, we wanted to see all of the many different reactions that Louis van Gaal had during the game. And in fact, it's almost exactly the same thing, this sort of stone-faced poker-facedness. And at the point of the Rooney red card, the camera whip zoomed right into van Gaal, just took a sip of his water, was very Dutch, turned around to sort of talk to his assistant, find out what happened, what was going on.
Made sure the winter cabbage soup was on the boil in the bowels of Old Trafford. But it was sort of the same face for the Rooney red card as when he walked onto the field and high-fived the United mascot with a gravity as if he was meeting Mr. Kofi Annan.
Yeah.
And then he signed autographs for children as if he was signing off on a Senate-approved declaration of war.
Yeah.
Exactly the same face all the way through. He's totally, totally consistent. Very different, I should say, Davo, to the man who blew the high five with Robin van Persie. That passion, that enthusiasm, that sideline excitement. We're seeing none of it. West Ham did make it interesting.
That's such a good point. You're so right.
De Gea flapped at a cross, a sign of the stress, perhaps, of working with a back line that's ever-changing. West Ham had 13 attempts on goal. United had 8. But when it came to it, 19-year-old debutant Paddy McNair, which is Irish for the Unsullied.
He had a great game.
Massive defensive play in the 84th minute to cement the win.
Yeah.
By the way, United, like Arsenal, another team with massive, massive injury lists, longer than James Joyce's Ulysses, 11 players out, the longest Van Gaal says he's ever had. Let me ask you this, Davo. On the Van Gaal hubbub with Rooney, letting people down, when you meet people, do you believe they're inherently good until they prove otherwise?
Yes.
Oh, so interesting.
I trust people until they... You know, I know this... constantly have this discussion with people. People will not trust. You have to earn trust. For me, you have a blank slate. You're good as gold the second I meet you. You've got to let me down.
You're a lovelier man. You're a lovelier man than I could ever be. By the way, this week in Ener Valencia stories, gift that keeps on giving, the West Ham striker from Ecuador, he announced to the press that before he joined West Ham, his impressions of the London club came from watching Green Street Hooligans. He said, I saw that movie, and when I arrived at West Ham, I expected it to be just like that, which I thought was totally ridiculous until I realized I learned about America through Heart to Heart, Fantasy Island, and the music of John Mellencamp.
Yeah, good point. The other Manchester team, Rod, Manchester City, beat Hull 4-2 in Hull. Goals from Sergio Aguero, Edin Dzeko put City up 2-0 just 11 minutes in. Hull stormed back, Rod, before the half, putting two past Willy Caballero, who started in place of crazy-eyed Joe Hart. City reasserted their dominance in the second half thanks to another goal from Dzeko and one from NYCFC's, maybe, Frank Lampard, his fourth goal, Rog.
America's gift to the world.
In 7 days.
Oh, Dave, he keeps maturing as a footballer, Frank Lampard.
Yeah, exactly. He's learning whole new aspects to his game
like
in Manchester.
Like celebrating.
Yeah.
I mean, the game was predictable, then not predictable.
Yeah.
And then predictable three phases, really. City went two up in 11 minutes.
Yeah.
And then their defending became as rigorous as a FIFA ethics summit. it was fascinating. The Manchester United City fans started the chant, "We are Man City, we score where we want." And then Elokim Mangala just nodded the ball into his own net.
That was a fantastic, that was a quality finish, Rog.
A quality finish from a man we've been in raptures about a week before.
Yeah.
His day got worse. 10 minutes later, he tripped over Hernandez in the box.
Yeah.
Is he someone you'd trust as soon as you met him? Which is he? Is he the epic guy that we praised last with a perfect partner?
Yeah.
For Vincent Kompany with his pace and athleticism.
He had a bad couple of minutes, Rog.
He did. Pellegrini, you can't analyse a player in one match.
Yeah.
He was wonderful, you said last week. You told me he's the best defender in the world. Thank God for Zabaleta, Dave, is all I got to say.
Yeah.
If ball footballers had an international team, he'd be my captain. Two assists, steadied the ship. One for Frank, Fat Frank, English Muffin. Other talking point, crazy Joe Hart drop for Willy Caballero. Bit odd, that. You'd think it was for an eye to the Champions League game. But no new contract for Crazy Joe. A lot of uncertainty swirling around England's number one.
Yeah, and not looking very happy about it on the bench, Rog.
My favourite story out of Hull City, David.
Oh, my God, this is brilliant.
The most is it the most English story ever?
It's the most something. It's the sort of... This is falls under the category of most English and also I love men.
Oh, darling, I find it terrifying.
Yeah.
Curtis Davis, captain...
Yeah. No relation.
...of Hull. No, a man calling himself Curtis Davis... model Josie Cunningham. How do you describe her as a model, David?
She's a glamour model, so I imagine that her highest aspiration is to whip her top off and get on page 3 of the Sun newspaper.
Yeah, the headline is, fooled by father of her child who made her believe he was a Hull City captain, for 18 months.
So for 18 months, she dated a guy.
He claimed he was a Hull City captain and sent Curtis defender Davis. Curtis Davis.
And he wasn't, but she didn't figure it out until...
I realised my mistake on Sunday just hours before I went into labour with this baby.
And she explained her actions thusly, right, Rog?
Well, she was asked over Twitter how she fell for this deception for such a long time. And she tweeted back, "I am not that clever."
Self-aware. I love it.
I've got to tell you, I feel this story, Dave,
is
some kind of symbolic story that captures the essence of England in the same kind of way as George Orwell's Animal Farm's not just about horses and pigs. It has I can't quite work out what the deeper meaning is, but I know it's in there.
It's there, without a doubt. Talking of deeper meaning, Rog, Chelsea 3, Aston Villa 0. Goals from Oscar, Willian, and Diego Jazz Hands become Jazz Fingers Costa. That is 2.5 goals from Brazilians there, Rog, and only half a goal from Spain. Almost a Brazilian hat-trick. Powered Jose Mourinho's men past Villa at Stamford Bridge and leave them 3 points clear at the top. Six games played, and Diego Costa already has 8 goals for Chelsea in the league, Rog.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many shocks. The first goal, Fabregas and Diego Costa not involved in it at all. Shocking. Yep. Secondly, that Diego Costa goal, he loves that run to the front post. Two backheel flicks in the build-up, that goal should have counted double.
Yeah.
But the most amazing thing about your man Diego Costa,
yeah,
Jose Mourinho, after the game, he cannot be on top of his game yet. He's doing almost nothing in training. He's just resting, David.
He doesn't even train. He doesn't even train, Rog. Although it looks like he's playing in the Champions League today. We'll see what kind of Diego Costa we have left. At the weekend, Chelsea, very impressive, Rog. They're playing football that, if there are any neutrals left about Chelsea, that you have to enjoy. Very entertaining to watch, playing great midfield football. They keep on throwing more people at you and defensively solid, a clean sheet.
5 points ahead of City.
Yeah.
Are you already getting into the position of silverware polishing?
No. Well, look, Chelsea will win an Arsene Wenger trophy. They will qualify for Europe this season. I think we can say that without a doubt.
But is this Premier League over, David?
No, of course it's not. It's 6:38 in, Rog. That's only 3:19. This is still going to be a close Premier League season. There's no doubt about
it. What amazes me about them is the flexibility in midfield. Cesc and Oscar.
Yeah.
They should be making the same runs. They should be getting in each other's way. But because of Oscar's tactical intelligence.
Yeah.
They seem to be able to coexist, and it's that flexibility that, I mean, for me, puts them at just levels above any Premier League team right now.
I think it's an interesting point about Oscar, and I think the other player who's had a very good start to the season is Ramirez. And think about it, last year in a World Cup year, Oscar and Ramirez did not have particularly good, certainly their 2014s were not very strong, as I think their eyes were on going to the World Cup. You know, Ramirez is actually assisting for goals. It's something he barely did last season, and he's had a much better start to the season.
Aston Villa's only real highlight was 3 minutes at the end of the game.
Paul Lambert completely blanking Jose Mourinho for the handshake.
Jose Mourinho likes to, for reasons that only he understands. I mean, it's become a thing.
Yeah, he leaves early.
Likes to leave the game early, maybe to beat the traffic out.
I don't know.
And so he walks over to Paul Lambert, who's sitting by a truly menacing Roy Keane.
Yeah.
Taps Lambert on the shoulder because Lambert pretends not to see this guy walking towards him and offers his hand to say, the game's over, well done.
Yeah.
Paul Lambert shows him his watch, shows him it's not over, points that he should go and sit back down again.
Uh-huh.
There's a moment in the film, I've watched it probably
almost as many times as the Jagielka goal.
There's a moment, I swear, you can actually see Jose Mourinho's sphincter tighten a little bit.
See, I don't see that at all. I just look at him and his face doesn't seem to change at all, and he just goes and gets on with what he's doing.
No, because, you know, even Jose Mourinho, who's got so much going for him this season, even he knows. He had a face on him where he realised he'd made a mistake. It was like picking a fight with Axe and the Smasher, with Demolition, Walking Disaster. Like, you do not pick a fight. Of all the Premier League managers, you don't pick a fight with those two.
Oh, well, Lambert, I don't think he's particularly worried about. I could buy him being a little afraid of Roy Keane.
By the way, last thing on Villa, let's all buy Aston Villa from Randy Lerner. He's offering it for 100. He wanted 200 million. He's just cut price.
Well, I'm going to wait for it to go down. Let's wait. Might go down to 50. Then we'll see. Then we'll have a whip round, Roger, Embassy Row, and see what we can do.
I've got to tell you, let's raise the money. I can't think of anything I'd like to do less than own a Premier League team.
Yeah.
I'd like to pick the jerseys, but I can't think of anything else that sounds,
I know,
mildly enjoyable about it. I'd rather raise the money and then give it away.
Quickly, Rod, Southampton win their fourth Premier League game on the trot, remain in second place with the game tied 1-1. Italian striker Graziano Pella, that's apparently how it's pronounced, blasted an overhead kick past Robert Green to give the Saints all 3 points at St Mary's.
Yeah, first Charlie Austin, cuddly Charlie Austin,
yeah,
did his little overhead.
Yeah, then off the chest.
Minutes later, Pella. Yeah.
Same
I mean,
goal.
It was reminiscent of the old McDonald's commercial where Larry Bird and Michael Jordan were playing horse.
Yeah.
I'll say about Pella, rare occurrence where a Dutch league goal machine thrives in the English Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to give a lot of credit. I love watching Ronald Koeman, ex-Feyenoord, where he managed Pella. And he seems to know how to build a system around Pella to bring the best out of him, making sure he can succeed. I adore watching Koeman, and he deserves every joy. They are second in the league. It is an unbelievable achievement. I love how he's approached this task with humility and humour.
Yeah.
I also love the way his tummy confidently hangs over his suit pants.
Yeah.
I want to be that man.
Yeah. Yes, they're playing great football, Southampton. Crystal Palace 2, Leicester City 0. Palace surge into the top half of the table, courtesy of goals from Fraser Campbell, Rog, and Jedinak, the best tackler in the league, Rog, at Selhurst Park. Neil Warnock's men are unbeaten in their last four Premier League games.
Oh, poor Leicester. Well, you can't play Manchester United every week, can you, David?
No.
Two set pieces were their undoing. Mm-hmm. I've got to say, there's few sights I enjoy more in English football than a rocking, bullient Selhurst Park.
Yeah, no.
It's one of the most rain or shine rhapsodic stadiums. Mm-hmm. This was their first home win of the season. I hope there's many more.
Sunderland 0, Swansea 0. Black Cats of Sunderland continue to search for their first win of the season. They failed to capitalise against 10 men Swansea after Angel Rangel received his second yellow card in the 80th minute. Swansea, meanwhile, still fifth in the table, Rog.
Yeah, still got that going for you.
West Brom 4, Burnley 0. An explosion of goals gave Baggies manager Alan Irvine, oh, he's so cute, Rog, his first league win at the Hawthorns sent Burnley to the bottom of the table. The Clarets are now without a goal in more than 8 hours of play.
Who had money on Berahino being a leading English goal scorer in the Premier League, David?
Yeah, he's a good player. Plays for the English under-21s, Rog. He's
well,
a good
cool.
striker.
That's cool. I mean, Daniel Sturridge injured. Welbeck adjusting to life in London. Mm-hmm. Ricky Lambert benched. West Brom striker, 4 goals now in 6 appearances.
Yep.
Even more impressive, David.
Yeah.
He made Alan Irvine smile.
Oh, love it. Nothing makes me happier than watching Alan Irvine on the sideline, Rog. Okay, Stoke City 1, Newcastle 0. The pressure increases on Newcastle boss Alan Pardew after a 15th-minute Peter Crouch header and ridiculous celebration, Rog. Sunk the Magpies at the Britannia. Newcastle has 3 points from their first 6 games, their worst start to the season since 2003.
Yep, Newcastle manager Alan Pardew played down a joke. Quote, comments from owner Mike Ashley that he had just one game to save his job. Ashley gave those comments outside the Golden Lion pub in Soho. They were obviously really well thought out.
Yep.
But joking about football in Newcastle, it's like joking about paedophilia or burn victims. It's just not funny. And I've got to say, the scenes out of Newcastle, it's, as a football fan, it's miserable to see what that proud club have been reduced to. Here they were undone by a Peter Crouch header. That goal celebration, it was like purposely, intentionally made for Vine. Mm-hmm. At McCarthy Lit tweeted us, at Men in Blazers, it was like witnessing a Giacometti sculpture come to life. Nice news from Newcastle. I'm trying to be positive. Congratulations to Newcastle star Cheick Tiote. Mm-hmm. Recently married in the Ivory Coast. It's his second wife. The Daily Mirror predicts there'll be chants across stadia. Two wives. He's only got two wives. I like nice relationships, David.
Once again, Rog, I love men. Okay, let's button up some other items, Rog. Our search to find the cover of FIFA 16. 10 copies of FIFA 15 are available to the winners. And I have to be honest, I have been playing FIFA all weekend, Rog. Oh,
Dave, my fingers are bleeding.
Oh.
I've led 14 season campaigns. Very few of them successful just yet. But I've loved the articles this week have been hilarious. Some of the Premier League's top players are rising up in anger over the new FIFA 15 game.
Yep.
Eden Hazard, Samir Nasri and Rio Ferdinand have told the FIFA complaining they're too short, too slow, they have the wrong haircut and they lack in skill on the new FIFA. The funniest is Rio Ferdinand, who in his quote, he's told EA staff, you've got to do your research. What's going on? You've not made me quick enough in the game. And Eden Hazard complained he was too small. Uh-huh. Quote, I've got to tell you, I agree with Eden Hazard. His bottom needs to be much bigger. It should seem like an eclipse whenever he gets the ball in that game. We've had thousands of entries.
Yep.
A lot, about 999 of them are Miguel Herrera ones. I'll just say that. But keep them coming and we will announce 10 winners next week.
Secondly, Rog, it's time for our update on the Men in Blazers national team.
Yes, as in my duty as secretary of the Men in Blazers national team.
Am I the treasurer?
You are, yeah. Okay. There's been a lot of corruption and no transparency at all in terms of our finances. I'll just say, we have had over 3,000 people apply to join this mighty citizen football team.
Excellent.
The response from Gibraltar.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got problems at the moment. FIFA won't recognise them. Yeah. So I understand they have...
They do live on a rock, Rog.
It's been a bit non-committal. As in, we've had no communication. We've now emailed them 4 times, faxing 11 times.
Yeah, and I've seen some tweets too.
And I'm not saying that their email is info@gibraltarfa.com.
You're not saying that?
No.
Because you wouldn't want their inbox to be flooded with GFOPs, clamouring for a response.
At Gibraltar, that's GIBRALTARFA.com.
Perfect, Rog.
David, but those are just two, I'd say, small stories in world football. The big story that everyone is wondering about is
the naming of the GDOP, the great dog of the pod, the black lab retriever that's going to be picked up in Tennessee, just south of Nashville, around November 11th. Rog, thousands of entries, thousands of people coming up with great names.
Thousands of people trying to name Davo's new dog,
Davo's best friend. I love Didier Drogba, one of my favourites. all of the Pep Guardiola, another very good one. I thought after this weekend, Jags would be a great name for a dog, Roger. I've had two black Jags in my life.
My future daughter. Yeah, you're going to call a dog after my future
daughter? Jags would be a great name.
I've thought of some names for
you. Okay, go ahead.
Goldberg,
after interesting.
After the wrestler.
Yeah.
God Shamagod.
Yeah, that's
after
a great name.
The greatest athlete of all time.
Really good.
I thought a lovely name. I was trying to think just for the Labrador, what would be a beautiful name. Mm-hmm. I thought Ray Hudson.
Ray Hudson is a fantastic name. And I live just off Hudson Street, Rog.
And for any kind of dog, any breed or mixed breed or whatever, Sir Alex.
Sir Alex is an excellent name. Come here, Sir Alex. Fetch Sir Alex. That would be so good. That's excellent, Rog. Well, thank you. Keep them coming. Menandblazers@gmail.com. We want to hear all of your suggestions. Okay, on to the Ravens, Rog, from Brendan Lowell. I had this conversation with a friend over the weekend, and we couldn't determine an answer to one of American soccer's great questions. My issue stems from a difference in my American English versus the English from England. Do I pronounce it Derby, as in the Kentucky Derby, or do I pronounce it with the hard A, Derby, sound that the Brits on TV do? As an American, it always felt strange calling it a Derby, as it sounds so different to how I always hear it pronounced. Hopefully, you men can shed some light on this for me. Cheers, Brendan.
Do you go American, stay with your roots, or do you fake English? That's really the question.
But see, I face this all the time as an Englishman in America. We've talked about this before. In England, we say Florida. We call it Florida. And Maryland, we call Maryland.
I have to put on an American accent. I find St. Louis very hard to get my head around.
Yeah.
I found Houston Street.
Yeah.
Houston Street.
Yeah.
There's words that, by the way, this question, when I was a kid, I used to spend a lot of time just sitting there trying to grapple with a sense of space being infinite.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd get headaches trying to conceptualize. I felt when I've tried to think about this question, it made me agonize. There's American words I've unconsciously adopted, David.
Mm-hmm.
I say garbage. Do you? Yeah. Not rubbish. I don't say rubbish anymore.
I say garbage, you're right.
I actually say tomato to my kids. Do you want some tomato?
You do?
Yeah. I say schedule.
Yeah.
I say privacy.
Yeah. You mean privacy?
Yeah, no, I say privacy. I don't say privacy.
You wouldn't say that.
And I'm overthinking it. There's a couple of words I do have problems with. I say water still.
Water.
No one understands in a restaurant. And the word I have the hardest time saying in America, making Americans understand, is Roger.
Roger.
They all think I'm called it like an Indian restaurant. Raja is how they spell it. When I go to Starbucks, I tell the barista that my name is Billy Ocean to avoid embarrassing interactions. But I am fascinated by this Derby thing, David.
Yeah, what is the right thing to do? I think you do have to call it a Derby. So it's not going to be confused with the roller derby, the Kentucky Derby, or the Derby in the American sense.
Derby Stansfeld of scandal.
Yeah.
But at DSchwartz313 said, at Men in Blazers, I'm just getting used to fixtures and form tables. Now you want me to mull over something I associate with hats.
Yeah.
Hashtag sensory overload. At Alex T. Foster, I say at Derby, we fought a revolution so we would be free to pronounce words correctly.
Yeah.
But it gets even crazier. When New York City FC, David, play New York Red Bulls next season, will that be a derby or a derby?
I don't know. Crosstown rivalry.
At Mile Rebecca says that will be called the Frank Lampard Show.
Yeah, it will be. Very true. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Saka, Scribe, Raven of the Week, Rog, and the wonderful patch is Scott Peterson of Boston via Minneapolis. Hey, fellas, 9 years ago, my girlfriend of just 4 months and I decided to go on a week-long vacation to England. Bold. She wanted to go to Liverpool for the Beatles Museum. I wanted to go to Manchester to see my team play at the Theatre of Dreams. The plan was to fly into London, rent a car to hit Manchester, pop into Liverpool, and then fly home. Things were going great. My girlfriend and I were getting along. London was fantastic. After a bit, I became used to driving in England, and we got to Manchester easily. Being in Old Trafford was truly a dream come true for me. United even won the game 2-1 against Portsmouth via a brace from Wasa Rooney. Remember Portsmouth, Rog? After the game, we hopped in the car bound for Liverpool. As dusk hit, the clouds thickened, as they do up there, and a rain-sleet combo battered the M62 motorway. Suddenly, the thrill of driving on the other side of the road in England turned into a liability. I completely missed our exit and ended up completely lost on the periphery of what I hoped was Liverpool. Our roadmap of England wasn't detailed enough once we got off the highway and we didn't have GPS. The more we drove, the more lost we became. Panic set in. My girlfriend and I began arguing about who got who lost. That argument naturally segued into accusations about whose idea it was to take the trip together in the first place. We didn't know anything about England except for the Beatles and Saka. What made us think we could successfully navigate our way across the country? Finally, through the rain, we saw a tiny gas station, and the first thing that we'd agreed on in an hour was that we needed a map of Liverpool if we had any chance to make it to the hotel we'd reserved.
Took an hour alive.
My girlfriend went inside only to emerge 10 minutes later with tears streaming down her face. Between sniffles, she says it was really hard to communicate with them. They have maps there, but none that say Liverpool. How weird is that? She looked at me and I knew it was a pivotal moment in our relationship. And if I didn't come up with something to save us, we may not be together by the time our plane touched back down in the States. I racked my brain, but all my brain knew about Liverpool was the two football teams. Liverpool, Everton, intense hatred, Derby, the Merseyside Derby. I jumped out of the car, raced into the gas station and came out 40 seconds later clutching a newly acquired map. Across the top, it was emblazoned, Roadmap of Merseyside. We figured out where we were. We got to the hotel. We have a fantastic finish to the trip. Fall even more madly in love. And 8 months later, I proposed. We're still happily married with a son named Wazza. Just kidding. His name is Beck. P.S. My wife wouldn't let me name our son after a soccer player, so we agreed on Beck, our favorite musician. I asked politely if I could choose the middle name of Michael, and she said sure. So his name with middle initial is Beck M. See what I did there? Smiley face. Scott Peterson, a great American name until the killer. That's hilarious. Brilliant. A Raven of the Week patch on its well way deserved. To you, fueled by Guinness.
I can't wait for the movie.
I know. That was great. That's the longest Raven we've ever read, but it was worth it.
By the way, Merseyside was invented in 1974.
It was.
Beatles broke up in 1970, so Americans have no idea it even exists.
Wow. Okay, your weekend looks like this, Rog. 12:30 Saturday, Aston Villa versus Manchester City. 7 a.m. Sunday, Manchester United versus Everton. 9:05 a.m. Sunday, Chelsea versus Arsenal. And in an MLS, Rog, a battle between first and third in the Eastern Conference as DC United plays Sporting KC at 8 p.m. Friday. I'm on the way to Great Britain, Rog, flying there tonight. Going to go and play golf in Norfolk. Actually where producer Jonathan grew up in Norfolk, Suffolk, all around that little part of the world. I'm going to go and play golf.
Maybe
with my
I'll do the Chelsea Arsenal preview with the Kyle Beckerman sign.
Yeah.
In the studio.
He's good, Kyle Beckerman. He's very professional on television.
He's very quiet.
Many ways to connect to us. One is our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the costs of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Roger?
In honour of Mohamed Besic
and
his terrible tattoos. He has obviously his name, Besic, on the back of his neck, which
creative.
Is the least creative tattoo of all time in a creative midfielder. But up and down his arms, he's got tattoos that look like he did them with a compass and ink himself. So I'm going to go with one of my favourite books, Russian Criminal Tattoo Encyclopedia Volume 1.
Fantastic.
By Damon Murray.
I'm going to buy that.
It's an amazing book. It's photographs, drawings, text from a collection of more than 3,000 tattoos, which were documented by a prison guard, a guy called Danzig Baldayev. Sounds like someone Man City would sign. He was a guard, but he decided to become an ethnographer, and he just drew thousands of tattoos, kind of skulls, swastikas, naked women, medieval knights in armor, daggers, blood, benign images of Christ, that Russian convicts have as different kind of signs and ritual folklore. And you'll never laugh at the sweat stains under Roman Abramovich's armpits once you flick through the pages of this book, is all I'm telling you.
Rog, as I said, just going off on a trip, one of the things I worry about when I travel is how am I going to groom my beard? People are always asking us for our fashion tips, our grooming tips, Rog. Miracle product, Gillette's new battery-operated 3-in-1 beard trimmer and razor. You bought one in Brazil.
It's crap.
Oh, I love it, Rog. I love it. I always
it's
travel with it.
It's only good on hot dogs.
No, it's like that's racist, the Fusion ProGlide ones on the hot dogs. No, it's fantastic, this product. Battery-operated beard trimmer. I wouldn't use it. It wouldn't be my everyday beard trimmer, Rog.
What
but
is
for
your
a trip,
everyday beard trimmer?
Oh, I use something very industrial, Rog, to go and do that. Plug in. I have to plug it into its own generator. But the for traveling, just one little AA battery, Rog, and it will power this. The 3-in-1 beard trimmer from Gillette. Not a sponsor.
Russian criminal tattoos.
Second way to connect to us is our newsletter, The Raven, fueled by Guinness, Rog, collates the best ravens, our own writing, on a weekly basis.
Tomorrow it comes out. Kyle Martino explains the art of the tie knot.
Wow. The very large tie knot. Sign up via meninblazers.com. We'll both post what we're reading, listening to, or watching. Also, new listeners, please download on iTunes and Amazon our Best Of album. Rog, the money's still coming in on this one. Somehow, soaring up the Billboard comedy charts, Men in Blazers unbuttoned. Now that's what I call suboptimal. Click on our wonderful, independently GFOP-maintained wiki, meninblazers.com, wikispaces.com.
It's a wonder of the world.
It is. And as always, go to meninblazers.com. Follow us on Twitter, at meninblazers, at Rog Bennett, at Embassy Davis, on Instagram, at meninblazers. Look at our Facebook. We've got a subreddit maintained by GFOP, Akshay. That's reddit.com/r/meninblazers. Email us at meninblazers@gmail.com.
Keep them coming. Amazing ravens.
Yeah, send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig!
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Size of the day.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Always to tweed, Rog. Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. I love you, Davey.
Love you, Rog.
Safe travels.
Thank you.
Happy Yom Kippur.
Four.